On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys! It's happening! Oh, my God, guys! Oh, my God! I wish you all were here!
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No!
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit.
But no, I mean, so that's crap. Like,
is this person 6'4"? Oh, I don't see height. It's like, okay, relax. Like, you're asking me to guess something from the top shelf. You don't need to act like you don't see height. Right. Like, this is not how the whole thing works.
I'm not sure what the f*** this is. I'm about to find out.
This is Tall Can Audio.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into episode 729 of the Tall Can Audio podcast. My name's Matt Robinson here in the TCA studios in beautiful Bytown, Canada. We are at Tall Can Audio on Twitter and Instagram, facebook.com/tallcanaudio. Make sure you're subscribed wherever you're listening to this one. We have company. We have guests in the studio for the first time in months and months. Why don't we start with a voice that you people have heard before? I think it was back in maybe June he was here the last time. Chris Hoffley from the Ottawa Sports and Entertainment Group. How's it going, man?
It's going good. It's really fun to be around people. Like, for real people.
Yeah.
Not on Zoom and not on
FaceTime people.
No, real people. And this the setup here is outstanding. Well, I'm going to commend you on that right off the top. We've got this safety-conscious, like, spit screen.
Yeah, we got the aquarium.
As our Prime Minister would say, in case anyone is speaking moistly.
Speaking moistly was maybe the most cringy term I've heard through the whole pandemic.
There's a bowl of ice and beer, and there's wipes, and there's swag, and yeah, let's go. It's good to be here.
And you know him from the Edmonton Eskimos. You know him from the Ottawa Redblacks. You know him from Carleton University. Wide receiver Nate Behar is here. How are you doing, man?
I am fantastic. Let me echo the sentiment. It's great to be here and get to chat with people. I feel like I've been doing a decent amount of, you know, radio spots and podcast stuff, and it's all just been over the phone, and you just sit there and eye roll.
Right.
Because you're like, I'd love to get in this conversation, but it's so dang hard when you're just like
talking. You don't know who's talking
exactly.
To you and
can't
what they
see
look like.
So this is amazing. Seriously, thank you.
Well, I really appreciate you both coming in for sure. So why don't we start with where I always start here. What are we drinking today? We went with the Calabogie Brewery, but what have you guys cracked open as we get started?
Well, I waited to crack mine open so he could get the sound.
I love that.
Nate got a little too excited.
It happened.
I've got the Calabogie West Coast American IPA freshly cracked here. It's a nice 5.5% American IPA.
Nice.
You better give that a whirl.
And I got a little softer wheat ale,
okay.
The Whipple Tree, this nice pale blue can, smooth, citrus, refreshing, which it is. It's very, very good. Actually, I've been driving around for the last little bit running some errands, so this is a nice thirst quencher.
Perfect. And I am into the Summer Solstice, as I trip over my own tongue. It's a little early in the show for that to be happening, but this is the Summer Solstice Pale Ale, also from Calabogie. So thank you to those guys. Made an emergency delivery to the studio yesterday. Appreciate that. If you guys don't mind, I want to lay out exactly how this came to be.
Well, how this came about is I had a good time on the show when you had me on the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I think I said back then you gave me an opportunity to drink beer and talk and not worry about swearing if that happens. So
sure.
I was like, right off the hop, this is good. And then we ended up having a really good chat.
Yeah. And we got a lot of really good feedback when you were on, with people acknowledging and noticing right away, like, that was someone who bought into what we do here. Like, it's not that formal. It's not that.
They just like that I don't think before I speak.
Well, you'll fit right in then.
But then, yeah, no. And then when we started, yeah, I think it started just with kind of the explosion in the world, and not COVID specifically, but, you know, when we started having this renewed conversation about about racism and, you know, in the wake of George Floyd's death and everything that's kind of happened since, and obviously more instances of this kind of horrible thing. But, you know, starting to think about how to get voices out there. And, you know, I know you wanted to talk about it, and we're looking for a way to kind of get into that conversation. And at the same time, Nate was doing a lot of media on his own. He put some really awesome stuff out there that I'll let him talk about.
I think it was the night the NBA shut down.
I think so, yeah.
And I was losing my shit on Twitter, because I'm very rational on Twitter, like so many people are. Like, and I was blown away by the level of ignorance that I was seeing. And I can remember tweeting out something along the lines of, like, I knew I grew up with this sheltered, white kid, nice neighborhood view of the world, but what I was seeing was shocking to me, right? Like, I knew racism existed, but the answers that these players were getting when they were making their statements or tweeting out, or the people who were commenting on what was happening around, I was legitimately blown away. And so I was kind of flipping out. And so Chris sent me this message and said, I got the guy, man. Like, here's somebody who can have this conversation and enjoys a good pint, speaks intelligently and whatever. And I'm like, well, you really only needed the first one of those to get on this show. But,
well, that's the thing, because I remember thinking, like, I was feeling a lot of the same kind of reactions as you were, just kind of, you know, not really knowing what to do with that kind of outrage. And
like,
not
we've
wanting,
talked about it
and not
on
wanting
the
to
show.
Get myself in shit on Twitter for just attacking, yeah, you know, random people and tweeting. So I kind of figured, like, you know, we could talk about it, and then it's just going to be two more, you know, white guys.
And that was exactly what
this,
I was just going to say.
So I was really thinking about, and I mean, there's obviously a lot of great guys, like, you know, our room, and and, you know, even breaking my own rule that technically Nate is not on the Red Blacks roster currently. Mm-hmm. Someone sign him. You really should. But, you know, I just thought that in the context of all of this, that, you know, I the way Nate was doing it different ways, you know, poetry, you know, getting himself out there and really kind of speaking from the heart, I think there's, you know, room for a lot of that. So it's like, hey, Nate.
Yeah.
And Nate, you know, when I come calling, the players that I like the most are the ones that listen to my my requests for favors and jump on it.
And that was the problem that I was running into, was we've had the conversation on this show before, but you're just another white guy who's talking out of his ass, and you feel like you're on the right side of it and you want to be supportive and everything, mm-hmm, but you don't know anything, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you don't. And so it was sort of uncomfortable to just be out there. Like, you're showing support, you're saying the right things, but you're like, I don't know, like, I need someone who can. And that was how this all came together. And Chris said, we can do something like this. We can set something like this up. So I really appreciate you coming in to educate me, to educate a lot of people, and just have a more educated conversation than what we're usually capable of here.
With pints. Yes.
With pints. They'll be educated at the start.
Yeah, exactly. And then we can devolve.
Sure.
That's okay.
But I think that, like, Nate, to you, like, I think that's part of, I mean, I know you've had, like, this conversation with a lot of people, but that's always my, you know, going back to when I was a kid and, like, growing up in, you know, the Ottawa suburbs, and kind of, you know, not that they never talked about racism, mm-hmm, but it was always very focused on, like, colorblindness.
Yeah.
Oh, and
yeah,
it was always very pushing this, like, we don't see color, mm-hmm, nobody's different, treat everyone the same way, which I guess on the surface, like,
makes sense.
You want to treat people, you know, if you're nice to one person, you want to be nice to this,
yeah,
person. But
sure,
that, I guess, I don't mean to take the first question from you here, but like, that's kind of like, as I was driving over here thinking that, it's like, where, I mean, how big of an issue is that? Just that education, and then, you know, how do we kind of, I guess, fucking get away from that kind of line of thinking,
yeah,
and be comfortable with the fact that, you know, it's not the same for everyone. Mm-hmm. Like, we should be seeing differences from person to person.
And I think that's it, is that I think the, and I'm not a linguist, or I didn't go to school for that or anything like that, but if you found the history of the meaning of the term, or the reason that the term colorblind was originated, I don't think it was actually for some altruistic purpose. Like, it wasn't, I don't think it was designed because somebody was like, this is the right way to live. It's just kind of like a scapegoat or a card to pull. You know, people make the, like, you know, dummies on Twitter say, like, oh, you pulled a black card? Like, well, right. I mean, a lot of people just pull the colorblind card. Like,
right.
Oh, I don't see color.
Yeah.
It's like, well, first of all, you should, because, yeah, there's nobody on earth that thinks that the people living in Delhi, India, have the same cultures and traditions as the people living in Western Kentucky. Like, that's just not, that's
sure,
not how the world works.
Well, I think at the starting point, you're a liar if you say that.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
Like fundamentally, right, for humans, like,
like, unless you are very literally colorblind, which,
right,
is another thing, you at least see shades. Like, you, yeah, see, you see a distinguishing factor between two different people. One person from, yeah, like we said, Swahili, and, or like, sorry, from
you
a
have,
place.
You have
Swahili,
a beard.
Yeah.
I currently,
yeah,
do not.
Yes, exactly.
I was going to say, did I shave?
Yeah.
The last few days. But no, I mean, so that's crap. Like, just,
yeah,
you know,
It's like,
I'm just starting at the most basic point. Like, yeah. Just, you know, be aware of it.
Does this person, is this person 6'4"? Oh, I don't see height. It's like, okay, relax. Like, you're asking me to guess something from the top shelf. You don't need to act like you don't see height. Right. This is like, this is not how this, the whole thing works. So I think that's important to take into account, is that like that whole thing wasn't created for anybody's benefit. It was just to ease the conversation away from anything. I don't see color, I'm good. It's just a one blanket term you can throw and then move on to your next thing. And I think that is the issue, because if you didn't see color and you don't see the differences in cultures, then you're gonna be allowed to continue to have your racial biases. Mm-hmm. Because there are things in different cultures, and this is not to affirm stereotypes by any stretch, because those simply, like, a lot of those are not true. But there are things in different cultures that are just simply different, you know? Whether it's the way you speak, the, like, in COVID times, this is one of the, I think, like, the closer proximity people talk to one another, how comfortable you are touching. Like, there's, in different cultures, there's just different norms in every single way. And
taking your shoes off, going in the house,
Americans, crazy, those crazy.
Who does not take their fucking shoes off? What are you doing?
I came in here, I felt so bad. I was like, shit, I have to take my shoes off.
But that's just it, right? Is it's like, if you don't see color, then it's insane. Like, these people behave differently and are raised differently. It's just about getting rid of that sort of that colonized structure of everything we are taught to know. That, like, just because the majority or the white majority or, you know, whoever, whatever moniker you want to give the white people, I'm saying in air quotes,
the whites.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, one of my big things is I don't think that exists in general, but that's a whole other conversation.
We're gonna have to book a few more slots on the show.
Really, but if you can't, if you can rid yourself of that, then, like, yeah, you can see color and see difference. It's just about accepting and realizing that nothing, no behavior is inherently better than any other. So I guess let's just circle back on that. It's like, yeah, like, you can and should see color. Everybody just sees it. It's just what it is. But it's just like, there's nothing right or wrong about these things other than obvious things. Like, if I walk up to you and spit in your face, I can't be like, oh, it's my culture, bro. Sorry. Like, that's not over. If I could try to, you know, like, a more normal one. Like, if I go and try to say, oh, actually, you can't abort that child that you were given during, you know, a sexual assault because of my religion. Like, okay, well, that one doesn't get a pass to me, because now you're infringing on someone's, like, pretty basic human rights.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's no just absolute to any of this, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's always, I mean, that's like, not to, like, there's no black and white, which is a weird kind of term to use in the context of this conversation, but, like, there's always some difference or some aspect of a story that's going to set it apart from something else.
Absolutely.
Well, there's, okay. There's, like, the colorblindness thing is, you're almost robbing yourself of an opportunity to learn something or we don't have to pretend to all be the same. It's more about understanding those differences, right? Rather than, oh, no, like, I view everyone the exact same. Well, we're not all the exact same. Yeah. That's not what anyone's asking you to see.
And who the hell wants that?
No.
Exactly.
Yeah. So why don't we take it back to that night where the NBA is shutting things down? I wonder, as a professional athlete yourself, what your view of that was, what you thought or hoped it might accomplish, and just sort of your reaction when it happened.
We're talking about the strikes, right?
To the NBA, when the players decided, we're not going to play, or...
I full disclosure, I cried multiple times that day. Like, just like a couple little pushed out, a couple singles, just like, so the nice ones, the good, happy singles are just like, happy's not the right word. But like proud, like, holy shit, you guys, like,
yeah.
Or like listen to great a little for bit. Like,
yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. Exactly. And seeing everything kind of stop was amazing. And then also, like, it really came to professional athletes who have nothing to do. Like, I mean, they have something to do, but this is like, these are the people that are going
to
make
one
of the biggest shifts we've seen.
To
yeah,
do this.
Exactly. Which was like a massive, like, what the fuck moment.
Yes.
There's another whole other conversation.
Yeah. Exactly.
Everyone's always talking about how athletes, you know, shut up and dribble and shut up and do whatever the hell else.
Uh huh.
But suddenly, hey, look who's.
And the entire world stopped.
Yeah.
Like, it's like the reason that Laura Ingraham has always said, or has said, shut up and dribble, is because she realizes that people actually listen to them. They're like, oh, these are some of the very few, the tiniest 0.1% of black people that people actually pay attention to and listen to.
It's threatening.
Exactly.
To
her getting paid $1 million to spew venom on Fox garbage ass news. Yeah, it's unbelievable. But I mean, you see it. Like, it makes sense.
Yeah.
It was a powerful night. It was just like, whoa. Yeah.
Did you expect that it would accomplish what they wanted it to? Like, my basic understanding of it was, let's stop the spotlight that we have and push it over here. For the rest of the day, for the rest of the week, whatever it's going to be, we're having a very different conversation. Why is this happening, right? What is going on? And the players themselves are making demands of their owners. Oh, use your arenas as polling places. And a lot of those owners, as rich men, have ties to a lot of industries, organizations that maybe historically haven't treated black people very well.
Follow the money.
Yeah, always. Yeah. Right. And so it was not anywhere near as simple as so many people wanted to paint it. Like, in a lot of cases, these players are employees of not great dudes. Mm-hmm. Right. Like,
yeah, I mean, it was it's cool. Like, it's cool to think. I'm of two minds here. I have my one mind that's like, let's be positive and look at the actual things that they did, which is super impressive.
Yeah.
And the other one that's like, we could always do more.
Right.
Like, do more. I mean, there's people, like, if you go on Twitter and if you've seen, you know, every now and then I'll tweet something that's going to poke at someone because, you know, I'm in that mood. And I just want to get, like, I want someone to debate this with me. And so we're talking about that. And when the NBA shut down and all the other sports and individual athletes that followed that, you had these replies from people being like, well, did they solve racism? Did they solve racism last night?
It was the replies that made the most crazy.
And that shit, like that, I legitimately can't wrap my head around, because if you're too, I don't know, caught up in your own crap and your own
storyline, what got me the most fired up. How sheltered I had been to, holy crap.
But it's more like, how do you not realize that the success of that moment is that we're all arguing about it on Twitter right now?
Yeah,
we're having a conversation.
You and I, Twitter troll guy, you're like arguing with me about this.
You're discussing, right?
So, like, mission accomplished for that, you know, for this moment right now, because I don't know if you've ever talked about it before on Twitter, but now you are, clown.
Yeah.
And your point is, you know, you're missing the point, but like you're kind of making it at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like this whole idea that, you know, you going on CBC and you know, putting yourself out there and a player taking a knee or a, you know, players not playing, that's going to fix it overnight.
Right.
It's ridiculous, but it's so not the point, right?
110%. And it's like, I'm looking, the way I sort of see these athletes now is like the way Jimi Hendrix and, you know, I'm trying to throw it on my 60 references, but everybody, everybody at Woodstock, their impact on Vietnam, like in the sense that they're just artists and people that are driving culture around it. And you see it. Like, you can feel the shift. Mm-hmm. Like, you can feel that people are understanding that you need to be anti-racism. You can no longer just be, like, grow up in your sheltered place and be like, it's probably not great. I don't know. Let's go play basketball. Okay.
Right.
Like, it's just creating this, like, vortex, hopefully, that lasts of just, like, these are just things that become part of the nomenclature of just like, hey, if you say a thing, someone's just going to check you. Or you can't believe a thing because that's obviously best. And right now it turns into cancel culture. Or it's like someone dubs it with some term that's like makes it seem like a hoax. And it's like, no. This is just the shift. This is the shift.
You like can't say this in your workplace and not expect to not get fired.
Mm-hmm.
Like, free speech is free speech, but free speech doesn't prevent my employer from firing me if I step, you know, if I say something that's completely counter to their thing, or if I do something that doesn't reflect on them well, like swearing on podcasts.
The simplest thing is like, it's like your body.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
You can't just move your body wherever you want. No, I mean, you can, but if it hits a face, like, you might get hit back.
Right.
It's that simple. It's like,
So, you know, stop hiding behind. No, I think if you ask people about, you know, the right to free speech, they couldn't break that down and, you know, have a conversation about it to save their lives either. But it's just, man, I don't know. It's I feel like there's just too many people right now that still just don't, like, they understand where people are coming from, but they don't want to
I think
they've been wrong their entire lives about how they think about something.
Let me not mess up my words. I don't think I empathize, but I understand.
Sure.
I understand how difficult that can be.
If something's been beaten into you, you know, I think of, you know, kids growing up in a really conservative household where they've had, you know, great grandfather was a racist, grandfather had a Confederate flag on the truck. Like, that shit is going to be, it doesn't excuse it, but like you kind of get where there's more work to be done for that kid to kind of undo all of that stuff.
It would be like if they grew up in like a random village secluded of internet and thought that until this point 2+2=6. And
right.
And you were just like, it actually equals 4. I was like, look at all of this research to show you. And then you'd be like,
Yeah. It's like living in North Korea, right? Where
yeah.
you get one version of the news mm-hmm. and the whole rest of the world goes, that's crazy as shit. What you're when you first step out of North Korea and you read.
We've got a beer crack.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. All right. Sorry. That's a 1883 or 1883. Sorry, KMPA. Perfect.
Thank you. Nice. Yeah.
Well, so that made up for you opening the first beer too early.
Yeah. Exactly.
Premature openage. It's no good. But
it's just. But
when you first step out of North Korea and you read the New York Times, you're like, that's not what I thought was happening. And so I forget growing up in the suburbs. I grew up out in the country. Mm-hmm. There was 400 kids in my public school. Two of them were black. Mm-hmm. They were a brother and sister who had been adopted from Africa, brought over to live with a white family, went to this white school. And I don't remember anyone being outwardly mean to them. But at the same time, it wasn't until much later where you start to go, God damn it, that must have been a lonely feeling to look around and there's no one that looks anything like you, no one that relates to you, no one that mm-hmm. it's not so much that anyone was mean, and I'm not saying no one was because I don't know everybody, but that wasn't my memory of it, but it was a completely different experience for those kids growing up than for the entire rest of their school. And so when I look at that and how it moves up, I wanted to ask you, I don't know how much you follow the NHL, but they did next to nothing in the aftermath of whatever. There was one or two players. Matt Dumba stood up, spoke very eloquently. Nobody or very, very, very few were willing to take a knee with him. Some of them stood with him. Like, little things like that. And it almost took me back to that moment in my public school of being like, what a lonely feeling that must be, that people are saying the right things, and but when it comes time to actually step up and do something, no one's there.
Yeah, I mean, oh yeah, the NHL.
It's a lot of rich white kids.
That's just it.
Yeah.
How much does it cost to play junior A hockey?
Yeah.
Growing up,
you're going to travel in your skates and sticks, and
right? I just talked to play like prep school hockey as an 8-year old. It costs a small fortune,
right?
Like, it's
so the thing with hockey is like that. It's not surprising at this point. You know, hopefully in 20 years, we're like, if that were to happen again.
Right.
I mean, I pray to God in 20 years, all this happens again. But,
I mean, it's not I get what you're saying, but it's not surprising. But like as a PR guy, like a guy who's my whole career is PR, like it's unbelievable.
You would
to
think
me.
That just out of the fear of public shaming,
I
just get on a knee.
Right.
Like,
I just can't. I don't know how that happens. Like, there's so many examples of, like, you didn't have to be the first one. No one says the NHL, you don't need.
Yeah.
Like, you're not setting the tone. That's fine.
My whole thing, we had Michaela Schreider on that night to talk about this. Even if in the most skeptical place in the world, all you had to do was follow.
Yeah.
You didn't have to be a leader. Other leagues were taking the night off. Other teams weren't going, we're not playing. We're not going to.
And personally,
you had every reason to just go, yeah, us too. We're out.
Yeah.
And you still didn't fucking do
it. And if I'm Matt, any one of, you know, a guy like Matt Dumba's teammates, I feel like a complete asshole. Like,
oh, I would hope so.
I hope so. I mean, I would. Like, yeah, it's just to see that.
But there's
like,
no evidence to suggest that they do.
And that's most, like, shocking part about it is that, like, it's so few. Like, when you see, you know, I'm not as plugged into the NHL media and socials and all that, but the couple times I've seen one of the white players, like, you know, whether it's a little thing he scratched out on his notepad on his iPhone and then posted.
Yeah.
And it's, like, pretty eloquent and well-spoken and talks about, you know, being empathetic and all these sort of things. It's, like, the fact that that drives you to shock every time.
Right.
Is, like, kind of just point, like, case in point. And so it's, like, the fact that of, what is it, 30 teams, however many guys on it, 20, that's probably close to, you know.
Yeah. 700 guys.
Yeah, 700 guys. And it's, like, you see four or five of those from guys that aren't black and you're, like, wow, this is what a... What a champion.
Yeah, maybe I'm too cynical now, but there's like not a chance in hell that most of those guys wrote any of that stuff. And so like it's just
and like
I just actually, don't like sometimes they're so written in the same way where you're like
one agency?
I don't know. I just and maybe that is too cynical. Maybe some of these guys really do feel it and put it out there, but the fact that it's so the fact that like you said it, like it's so once in a while and so like, oh my god,
but,
Austin Matthews or John Tavares is really speaking to me. I'm like,
but anytime something racist happens in the NHL, you're going to go to the same, 12 guys in the league, and all of a sudden, Evander Kane has to speak every time this happens,
and
right? Or Wayne Simmons, every time this happens. Well, how did this make you feel? How do you think it makes me feel?
And that is the weight, that is especially the weight of being of being what is seen as the spot on a white page, and to put it viscerally, to being the one, you know, the one or two or the this tiny percent of people that are seen to be of a different color,
right?
And then the majority of where you're at is that it's like every colored issue becomes only your issue, which is like so the antithesis of everything that people are screaming is like, no, this is human rights issues, this is everybody's issues, because it's like you're like, unless you think that there's a value, like unless you think that on an Excel chart the color of my skin has a value that you can input, then there's actually no difference.
That's quantifiable.
Exactly, like exactly right. But it's like, that's the thing, is it's like when it becomes like the issue of, and this conversation is completely different, I hope you understand that. It's all about where, it's all about where you come from in terms of conversation, but you know, it's, that's my belief at least, is like where you come from is important, because it's like otherwise you're saying like, oh, these are your issues, like how do you what do we and he's like, well, why are they just my issues? Like, like you don't feel upset that like somebody got their neck choked out by a cop? Like, I'm confused.
Is
I'm
it
like,
just because you're a black guy, you should be more fired up about this somehow?
Like it's a walkie-talkie.
I wanted to ask,
through my radio.
I'm curious about that too, because I again, like, I didn't want, you know, kind of making this happen, I didn't want you to feel like I'm going to find a guy who's going to be a spokesperson for the black community. Mm-hmm. Because like I know you and I respect the hell out of you, and I just, you know, your voice to this issue has been so powerful. So that's what's behind that. But I like, do you feel that like you want to put yourself out there and get your message across and say what you have to say, and that's been amazing? Do you feel like conflicted at all? Like you want to do this, I don't want to be just like the spokesperson for all things that are black. I don't know if that's a good way to phrase that. But,
no, 100%. I call my mom. I forget what happened. That's also a horrible sign. Somebody else died, and I called my mom because I was like literally within, I think it happened, and then it might have been around the NBA thing. I think it was, because I had like went from, you know, the Medium piece and everything attached to that, and the CBC stuff, and which was like sort of, you know, a couple, like 3 or 4 or 5 a day or a week, sorry, in terms of just media appearances, whether it was just an interview or whatever, to like complete quiet, which is great. Worked on the camps and worked on my businesses and all that, yada, yada, yada. Then like the NBA thing and like some other stuff happened. And literally that evening, I went to like that week, I think it was either Monday or Tuesday, was like, I was like 6 or 7 bookings. And I was just like, oh my gosh. And then like, I remember my mom called me, she's like, what's going on? I was like, well, I'm screwed now. Like this week's gone to shit. I have so many things to do for business, yada, yada. Then I was like, Mom, am I like a? I was like, well, I'm not really profiting, but I was like, is this like, this feels like the start of me being a racial profiteer, like in the worst possible way of being am I benefiting from people that look like me dying? I was like, do I stop saying yes to talking about it? Because I was like, that's not where I want to go. I know in my head that that's not right, but at the time you're like, shit, the last thing I want to do is be, you know, one of the damn Republicans in Trump's cabinet who like are. Apparently black and like are making millions of dollars just to like be the quote unquote black person that he can go to and like make himself feel better for being an oligarch.
You know what it reminds me of, like when I was a reporter, and what I would look like when there'd be like a big breaking story involving, like, you know, say it's like some kind of medical expertise I need to find an expert of. You go on university sites like Carleton or OU, and you could literally like Google an area of expertise and find like a spokesperson for that issue.
That's awesome.
And which was great when you're talking about like science and like, you know, quantifiable stuff. And, you know, but it like that kind of, I get that kind of feeling where it's like all of a sudden you're seeing the same 3-4 black guys out there doing the same media hits. And I know
poor
how
Donovan
that works.
Bennett.
Right.
Right.
And
poor Kayla Gray.
And I know how that works because I've been in that business where it's, you know, you go back into your archives and see what other reporters have talked to. You're like, well,
you want to do the best job for your
right. And so I think not to defend them, but like they're probably not putting in like any thought into it. They're like, this guy's done it. He's good.
Oh, yeah.
So we're gonna go back. But at the same time, it's like, man, and that came from talking to Moten Hopkins a couple months ago. He came on one of our staff meetings to talk about this and hit like talking about microaggressions and racism and just him talking about how, you know, like little example, you know, telling someone, you know, if I sit here and be like, man, Nate, you're really well spoken.
Yeah, yeah.
And saying it with this kind of element of, I don't know if it's surprise or like, oh man, I expected you to sound totally differently. That one is the one that kind of smacked me in the side of the head and made me really kind of reevaluate my own, because I always go to guys who I think are well spoken.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted to kind of reevaluate that as being like, hey, well, am I looking at them because they're well spoken? Because they're well spoken? Am I trying to fit, you know, hit a diversity quota in my interviews? And like, it really starts to kind of open up that old like self perception conversation.
And it's a tough one too. Like, I mean, back home, since, I mean, over the last couple of months, the amount of conversations I've had with people from London is like, it's beautiful, exhausting, beautiful. But in terms of even just like the simple, like not even simple, it's pretty fucking bad. Everybody knows it now. But in high school, you're barely even black. Like that used to, people don't understand why I would hit people in the face for that. Like they never got it until right. like recently. And I'm like, I don't understand how you don't get, but yeah.
So. For sure.
Well, because you're like slightly less dark than this guy. And I'm like, this guy's what my image of like a black person yeah, is.
And it's also like behaviorally, it was like, first of all, if you want to throw out stereotypes, I'd probably do them. I can't even begin to imagine. It's like, it's so crazy now because it's like, oh, I think I could think of a million fucking examples of metaphors, but just they're all exhausting. I did have a metaphor for your, because this is my favorite one. I used it once, and I feel like I always want to share it. Cause imagine that you have a friend named John who's a carpenter, or let's give him something more specific. He's a deck builder.
Okay. Yeah.
And then COVID hits again next May.
Right.
And it's like no one's going to be able to leave for the summer, but you're allowed to have 1,000 people on your back patio if you have one, on your back deck. And imagine John and his 1,000 friends on Facebook all hear that they can build a back deck
yep.
and do whatever the hell they want with it. And every single, and like, so when you called John last year mm-hmm. and we're like, yo, you think you help me with my deck? He's like, yeah, I'll come by. I'll give you some sketches. Like, I'm not going to build it, but yeah, I'll get you set up. Now imagine that happens, but it's like 1,000 of his friends are like, right. shit, now's the time to have a deck. Now's the time to learn everything about decks. Right. And every single person calls John. And for like 3 straight weeks, his phone doesn't stop. And they're just like, John, I got a deck. Here's what I'm looking at. John, I got a deck. John, can you tell me a little bit? John, hey, the deck.
You don't get this a lot, but I got a question about, yeah, my, deck.
About my deck. Exactly. Yeah.
So
and he's like, oh my God, yeah.
I'm really glad you brought that up because I saw a tweet that has stuck with me for a very long time since this whole thing kind of started to boil over again. And it was, I'm paraphrasing because I don't have it here in front of me, but yeah. it was, it's not your black friend's responsibility to educate you.
Mm-hmm.
Go and read something, go and whatever, but don't feel like you get to just go to them and ask to. And that stuck with me because there's a kid I know, he's about 10 years younger than me. I worked with him for a long time. I coached him. I know this kid. And around the same time that I read this tweet, I was sort of tempted to text him and just go, you doing okay? Mm-hmm. Like it's, but after reading that, there's almost this like, I don't know, for lack of a better term, white guilt. Mm-hmm. Am I now one of 30 white people that texted my black friend mm-hmm. to say, are you, I didn't want him to educate me. I just wanted to touch base and you know, everything okay, anything. But it was almost pushed back, almost similarly to what you just said in terms of, you know, John's getting a lot of calls right now. Maybe you could just leave John alone to carry on with his life. You know, what do you make of a tweet like that, right? That it, mm-hmm. it's not John's job right now to deal with all these calls.
I absolutely agree.
Poor John's having a tough go.
Exactly. Poor John is having a tough go. Yeah. No, I agree, but as most of my philosophies boil down to, it's intent more than yeah. anything. I'll use my own example. Like around the time I wrote the Medium article, mm-hmm. like it got a lot of reception.
Read the Medium article.
Share it.
I think if you just go to Medium and look up Nate Behar.
Sure, and we'll share it at tallcanaudio.com as well. Check it out.
Yeah, when you, like that was great, and like incredible things happened from it. Got so many screenshots of people talking to their moms and grandparents, and like, it was great.
Yes.
But then it was also like just like the avalanche of people just being like, hey, such a beautiful piece, man. Like, where do you think, like, where should I start reading? And I was like, I literally said in the article that I don't owe you a library.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah. So it's the.
So did you read it?
Yeah. I mean,
did you read it all the way?
Reading
through?
Comprehension in grade 7 was like a needs improvement. So it's like. But then there's also the conversations that came out of that. So to give the two sides of that coin, of like, hey, man, that was so incredible. Like, you know, this made me reflect on X, Y, Z. And, oh, yeah, well, you know, what do you think? And I had great conversations. That was the whole point, is to start conversations. And then eventually gets to the point of, like, I'm really struggling. Like, I feel like there's so many people sharing messages. Like, where would, maybe if you were in my space, like, where would be the one to start? Like, where would be the place? And, like, that conversation, I never got sick of. Because I was like, that's real intent. Mm-hmm. We had a conversation. You care about this issue. You're not saying, like, give me a class syllabus. And
what is racism?
Yeah, exactly. And, like, can you tell me the book that has it?
Right.
Webster's Dictionary, you dumb. But, yeah.
Maybe Google as a starting
point. Yes, exactly. Exactly. Or like, you know, people that would be like, well, who's your favorite author on the topic or on this discussion? And like, that was good because I could feel like that wasn't surface level, virtue. That wasn't virtue signaling. No. That wasn't like, I want to read Pick Me. Yeah.
I want someone to pat me on the back and be like, look at what a good job you're doing.
Exactly.
Which book erases white guilt?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I saw similar, like, I don't know if you guys have heard of him. Wabgishag Rice is a former CBC reporter here and also up north for a while, and now he's working on his probably more lucrative career as an author. But he's a First Nations journalist and someone who's very, you know, passionate about his roots. And he had a similar kind of tweet. He's like, you know, I'm not the one, you know, Indigenous guy who's here to,
right,
you know, validate your land claims or edit this or, you know, do this or like all, like, and like reading that, I was like, man, I was like, I can't imagine that, like, you know, my dad's a lawyer and he's constantly having people ask him to like rubber stamp their passport applications and stuff like that, but that'd be like the extent of his, and he's always like, oh, people taking advantage of me. like you do fine, chill. But that kind of thing, I'd be like, hey, I'm doing this land acknowledgement thing at my, you know, company thing, can you just, you know, you're, you know, native, yeah, guy, can you read this for me?
And, yeah,
like that would be, I imagine, exhausting.
Just draining. Exactly.
And fighting, like, you want to educate these people at the same time. It'd be like, I don't want to be your, yeah, you know,
token.
And your professor, yeah, like, right, that can learn something on your own.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, I think that's the thing, especially now, like, if it was, like, 1927 and, like, internet didn't exist and even libraries. Like,
oh, I'd be so much happier.
Yeah.
If it was still 1927, yeah, we'd be having a lot more of these issues.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Well, that's true, but I wouldn't be on Twitter, so.
So you're a lot more direct conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, you know, then, like, it's one thing. But right now, you could, like you said, you alluded to it, like, you could just Google this shit so quick.
We all have extra time right now. Like you're not going out to the, you know.
And that's just it. In June was like, there was no excuse.
Yeah,
like,
right.
You can't do it. You literally can't. You can scroll Tinder as long as you want. You still can't even go meet her. Like, just go. If you want to talk about how much you want to research, like, go just do it.
Yeah. Like, if the only way you can think of to learn more about, you know, whether it's black history or racism or, you know, combination, mm-hmm, of both, which I would think would be the best way to do that. If your first thought about how to learn more is to, like, find black people on Twitter to, yeah, tweet at them and ask them for advice, like, man, like, right, I have more questions about how you live your life. Like,
yeah, also
figure it out.
What did they teach you?
Not much, apparently.
At school, like, how is that your way to learn? But yeah,
no, like, I feel like you're doing your part. Like, you're out there, you're talking, and you're doing it in, like, creative, you know, whether it's, you know, writing or spoken or, you know, freaking poetry. Like, I don't know where that came from. That was spectacular. Well, you have to do that, but you have to give people that and then let them, like, take that and, like, go off on their own and, like, learn some stuff.
Right. And I'd like to ask you what your thoughts are on kneeling during the anthem from the perspective of if you were playing football in the United States or,
yeah.
Or this idea of, obviously, Americans playing up here in any different sport. You see it a lot, at least early on, mm-hmm, not so much now, in the Blue Jays season, those players trying to figure out what to do. Would it change the equation for you at all as a Canadian, mm-hmm, to kneel during the American national anthem? If you're on the Blue Jays, do you kneel during just the Canadian and then get up because you're not an American or vice versa?
Well, like, and in the CFL, there's only the Canadian anthem, sure, there, right? So, yeah, like, that's...
Does that...
Shit.
And you see, this is the time you can actually talk about this, Nate, because, yeah, you're unaffiliated.
Right, exactly.
See, if Nate was still officially on our roster, he could answer this question, and I would get 73 phone calls tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But,
well, I don't want to put you in a tough spot.
No, no.
This isn't a... But to me, I wonder about the cross-border shit that makes you go, I'm willing to take a knee during my anthem because, mm-hmm, I believe in this. Does it change the equation when I'm taking a knee through someone else's?
Oh, me personally, I'd take both knees for the American anthem.
Okay.
I'd sit on my ass. I'm not going to lie to you. My dad grew up in South Florida. My whole dad's side of the family lives in Florida and Georgia.
Okay.
That's a failed state in almost every sense of the word at this point. I mean, yeah, you have kids in cages, and then the story,
the empire
just
is rotting
recently. Like, yeah. Oh my gosh, bro. Yeah. Palpatine is lightning bolting everybody.
Right.
It's horrible. I would need. Yeah, like I said, both knees for them. I think it's about, in a lot of ways, for somebody, I think I would. Maybe here's how I would take my a similar perspective as like a Jared Goff or one of the guys, because I'm not exactly directly. Let me rattle that one around my head. But I think sure. I think if I was currently in the NFL,
right,
as a Canadian,
yeah,
I would 100% be kneeling with my teammate. There's no chance. Mm-hmm. I think that if we were kneeling for,
what about an American kneeling during ours?
I would like to have a serious and intellectual conversation with him about what,
because we do have some of the same.
Yep, 100%.
Yeah,
and I would love to have a conversation about what he believes that is representing.
Right.
And then go from there. And if it was a good conversation, then with great points, then I'd sure. be like, "Hey, fuck, man, I'll be next to you."
Right.
I mean, I'm not the biggest person who believes in like these definitions of countries in general.
Patriotism.
Yeah.
I was gonna say the same thing. Like this whole, like, I mean, we're Canadians, so like, yeah, even like the hand over the heart during an anthem, like, we just don't do that. No. Like, it's not.
Right.
I'm, you know, I've got a fucking maple leaf tattooed on my chest. Like, I know I'm Canadian. Like, mm-hmm. I don't need to demonstrate right. that.
Displays.
Which, well, I was thinking about that, though. Like, does the anthem mean so much to me? Like, if my whole team
we've also
decided
tied
that they
it way less
that, like,
to the military, which is...
Oh, that, and that's the not, biggest thing. Yeah, that, I think that's the biggest
thing. And it comes down to what you think that is protesting, right? Like, right. Is it about the anthem? Are you protesting
the number
the
of military members who've come out and said, I fought so you could take a
yes,
knee?
Yes, exactly.
Well, and if you go back to the crux of, you know, when Kaepernick started...
He started on the bench.
He started on the bench, and he was, you know, he was advised by people who, you know,
my understanding was by military people.
It was by military people who were said that you'd be more respectful and, you know, acknowledging that you're acknowledging them and you're acknowledging the flag and all that stuff, but you're, you know, you're doing something.
Yeah.
It's still an
bench.
Act.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, if I was speaking super truthfully, at this point, I would, if I was in the NFL, I would be advising people, not advising, I would be screaming from the rooftops that, like, let's, like, stop going out on the field for it. Like, if you want to actually protest, because that's the whole thing with movements, right? And with activism is that it's co-opted. I mean, that's how the system stays the system and how it continues to churn the results it wants out. Is it just like it listens, and once things start to stop getting the results that they want it to, or, you know, the things shift, they just shift how they react to them. So, like, okay, at first it was an upheaval and like everyone's arms were in the air about kneeling, and then it's like, okay, well, shoot, now the general public is moving this direction. Let's just accept this as the new norm, but package it however we want to.
Right.
So now kneeling has just honestly become the new norm.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that I think people should just stand for it at all, but like that, to me, like, be disruptive. The change only happens when things are disrupted and people's
senses are
that. Exactly.
Do
so now
people are going
to
notice.
Yeah. So now go inside. Like if everyone's allowed to just, if the NFL says, you know what?
I think that's what the Dolphins did this weekend,
yes,
if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Like, if Jerry Jones is saying, hey, you know what, buddy? You can take a knee. That's a good sign that you should do the next thing.
We're moving to the next level.
He's improving. Now. I want him to get agitated.
The next step. Like, exactly. Because he is, in a lot of ways, I mean, not a lot of ways, in almost every single way, the issue.
Yeah.
Right. Like, yeah.
Encapsulated. Billionaire of with all the woes and flaws in capitalism and white guy from the South.
You want to talk about
not
stereotypes?
Yeah, exactly. Very, yeah.
Like,
oh,
like,
yeah.
There's, you know, talk about stereotypes that exist for a reason. Like, there's your,
yeah, like he's set. And I mean, that's tough. And I don't know.
So all of this to me is an important conversation, but we've only got Nate for a short time.
So we're not going to solve. We're going to have to solve it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, maybe in the sequel. Right?
There you
we
go.
Can do this again. But I would be remiss before you get out of here. Mm-hmm. The Raptors go down at 7. What'd you think? What would you do this offseason? What do they do moving forward?
Oh, it hurts.
Still
it
so
hurts
raw.
So much. I think the hardest thing about it was giving up hope a year ago.
Yeah.
When Kawhi left. And like, in a good way, like, oh, we did it, man. I literally have a fungi tattoo in honor of Kawhi
nice.
On my
love
quad.
That.
It's fungi, period. It's on brand.
It's very good. It's written the way it should be. Like, the font is no fun
at
all.
Times,
like,
Roman. It's
only was possible to tattoo that laugh somehow.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, I was fully on board. Like, hey, he came. He saw. He conquered. We got it.
Did
we
not
won.
Dog us for a second.
No, that emotion was everything I've ever wanted as a Raptors fan.
Yep.
Me and my brother used to make a pack to try to watch 82 games, like, during the Andrea Bargnani year.
When
Jose Garbajosa was, like, putting up buckets for us. So, like, that was the most amazing thing. And then the season happens, and they start dominating again. And you're like, oh, my gosh. I feel like I'm just watching them again. Like, this is amazing. Right. And so, like, I think that up
from the championship to the down of him leaving, but like understandable down, to up again was like, oh, well, we're just in the playoffs. We're just going to win again.
Right.
So it just made it so much worse. I think that...
Especially when the Bucks went down, you're like, oh, the path is open. Exactly. Like, you got to do this.
But three-point shooting was rough.
Yeah. I'm pretty certain that the Celtics and maybe the Lakers, just because LeBron is LeBron,
yeah,
were the only teams that were going to actually beat us. That's my belief. Anybody can add me on Twitter and talk to me about that. But Boston is so
Nate likes
talented.
To argue on Twitter. Please
Boston is so talented. And Nick Nurse put on low-key a coaching clinic. Again, if you're a basketball head and want to talk schemes, we can talk about this. But he was, especially Game 7, put on a clinic. How disrupted Boston's defense or offense looked in the first half with all of his different sets he was running the deal. It was gorgeous. And then we just started – then Pascal just kept burying his head like a – I don't know. What's that – Pokemon, the little Diglett.
Oh, Pokemon! Yeah, we're going with. It's gonna be like Anteater. What are you? I mean, he's trying to do charades here.
Yeah, he was just
works really well for a podcast.
Yeah, exactly. He was just literally burying his head and getting stripped by the 3, 6, 7 wings on Boston. Like it was just to be expected.
But the best tweet I saw was Spicy Peas playing more like a mild mango chutney right now. Yeah.
For the offseason, nothing. I mean, hopefully sign Freddie back. I don't know how it's gonna happen.
How about sign Giannis?
Yeah, I mean, that's
any chance? Any chance?
Okay, so I saw reports on Twitter that it was like pretty well known in the bubble that he was going to Miami or Toronto.
Yeah, I saw that too.
And then so I remember talking to my brother about this, and like I was like, let's hopefully the Heat kill him because then he sees how KD got treated when he went to the team to beat him out, and he's like, I don't want that.
Right.
Also, Greece. Toronto is very multicultural. Mm-hmm. Apparently, there's been a couple thousand people at the games with Greece flags and stuff.
Best Greek food I've had is Toronto.
Toronto's got a great Greek town.
There you go. Yeah. So, I mean, hey, the stars are aligning. I mean, definitely, I would.
That settles it.
I was going to say that settles it. No, but I think it's
doable. East of the Danforth brings Giannis home.
And I think Pascal's going to bring it around, too.
Yeah.
I do.
Scott, it was just a blip. You got to think it's just a blip.
And did you see the tweet about like what Kyle Lowry said? He's like, after my Washington series, when we lost, got swept, like I read every single article.
He's like, I'm going to tell you the exact same thing. Read, because I would usually tell guys to not read their own press. But in that situation, like when you can actually like fire you up about it.
Yeah.
We've had certain players in the past that I actively have tried to tell them not to read their own press.
Yep.
Not great. That'll be for another show as well.
Yeah. I hope you'll come back. I hope we can do this again because, you know, we only had so much time. But let's go around. Hit me with where people can follow you. Start with you, Nate.
At Nate Bahar 11 on everything on Twitter and Instagram. Like,
see, that's a nice that's a guy easy, that knows like how to work his brand. Yeah. Consistent.
Love it. Chris?
I'm on the Twitter machine at Chris Hoffley and Instagram at Hoff on Sports. I'm trying out TikTok, but I'm new and I don't remember what my TikTok name is yet, so I'll follow up on that. My little sister's 18. She's trying to teach me how to be cool.
I'm 37 and asked my little cousin, what's TikTok? Should I be on it? And she just said no.
She just laughed. She just laughed at
me. She's just like, no, just stay away.
I think that's the right answer.
Yeah, for sure it is. Yeah. I don't need any more of
plus,
that.
Plus, if you have Twitter, you get the best TikToks anyway. That's what I try to tell my girlfriend. I'm like, why do you have TikTok? Just get Twitter. Learn how to use it. You're going to get
the best
TikToks.
Stuff will end up there. Exactly. That's right. Maybe we can do this again. We can actually talk a little CFL and what's happening there.
Absolutely.
It would be great if you guys can come back. I really appreciate you making some time
today. You brought beer and the studio is sweet. I'll be back anytime. I may not leave.
Right on.
I see it caught in the corner. Yeah.
This has been awesome. Really appreciate it. That's Nate Bahar and Chris Hoffley. We will share all those social media links that they just mentioned at tallcanaudio.com in the show notes. We're on Twitter and Instagram at tallcanaudio because we know how to do the same thing. Facebook.com/tallcanaudio. We will catch you all on the next one.
It is over!
Now that's a tasty beverage.
Thanks for listening. You can get more TCA at tallcanaudio.com or by searching Tall Can Audio on your favorite podcast app.